the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Welcome back to Smarter Every Day. You might not know this, but every single hydraulic pump in every car you've probably ever been in has a little bitty magnet in it to catch shavings so that the mechanism doesn't foul up. Now, I know this because when I was growing up, both of my parents worked at this plant and made steering pumps. The cool thing about that is that they would bring home the magnets that were out of spec and bring them to me, and I got to play for hours and understand things about how magnets attract and how they repel each other. So, today I want to talk about magnets. Specifically, I want to do a slow motion experiment with a little boy named Garrett who reminds me of my childlike fascination with magnets. And then after that, I want to talk to you about the next great manufacturing leap in magnets. Printable magnets. It's amazing. Let's go get smarter every day. Two R's, two T's. This is Garrett. Two R's, two T's. Hello, Garrett.
Hello. How are you?
I am in Connecticut, and Garrett brought something for me to do in slow-mo. What did you bring me, Garrett?
I brought magnets that I don't want to flip them right now because that'll take a long time to redo. But when you flip one, they all turn together and almost instantly go back into one.
And you observe this yourself, right?
Yes.
This is something you came up with and you want to do. So we're going to try it in slow motion, right?
Once I flip this first part over, and these are all going to fold over onto it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Yeah.
Oh, that was really cool, actually, Garrett. That was actually very, very cool. All right, so...
Whoa. The force is strong with this one.
Yeah. And you came up with this idea, huh?
Yeah. I was just looking at them one day, and I was making them into that, and I accidentally flipped one into that.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Play with magnets as a kid was pretty simple. You had a north face and a south face, and they would align and slap together. But now, something else is happening. We're at a company called Polymagnet here in Alabama, and if you look at their design, you got to get an idea of what they're doing. They can print specific magnetic designs on the surface of a magnet. Now, you've never seen anything like this because it's bizarre. You can get new, unique, crazy behaviors just by manipulating that magnetic field. Let's go check it out.
This is Jason Morgan, head of engineering. He's agreed to teach me about polymagnets and show me some stuff that most people don't get to see.
So this is a conventional magnet.
Okay.
So if you look at the conventional magnet, it's magnetic.
Wait, hold on. What is this?
This is magnetic viewing film.
Magnetic viewing film.
Yes.
Okay.
What that does, it shows you transition in the magnetic field.
Uh-huh.
So it allows us to see where the magnetic field transitions from north to south.
Got it. Okay.
So this is a conventional magnet. It's a neodymium magnet. So north face, got a north face and a south face. And the magnetic field goes from one face around to the other face.
Can we draw on the whiteboard?
Absolutely.
Let's say this is our magnet here.
Right.
So the field lines are going to go out and in, right?
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, you'll have, closed loop, don't want to break Maxwell equations, all the way around from your north pole to your south pole by convention.
Gotcha. Okay.
So what we do different is we take a magnet and create pole regions on the surface. So we create north and south on the same surface of the magnet. And what that allows us to do is close that circuit that David was talking about in a much more compact space. And that gives us a stronger field close to the magnet, a stronger force close to the
magnet. Okay, so I think I got it. So what you're saying is if we've got the big loop here,
yes,
north and south, you're doing the same thing, only they're looping much closer together.
Correct.
Like that? Even in on itself?
Almost. Right. So what actually happens is you have the north and the south on one face of the magnet. And so what happens is you have the field go like this. And so instead of this long field that can create interference and waste energy, you have a tight field so that it's tightly controlled. And you have the force really focused near the magnet.
These people are like modern-day wizards. They can create whatever magnetic field they want on any of these magnets. I sat and talked with them for about an hour and came to understand that the way the magnet interacts with the target material determines how strong it's attached.
And so what you're saying is the magnetic field in this one is going to come up and around and go all the way back to the back of the magnet, correct?
Correct.
Okay, in this one, we have a tighter grouping of the magnetic field, so the circuits are going through the steel and they're completing just outside of the steel on the other side, correct?
On the same face of the magnet.
Same face of the magnet. So they're not going all the way back around to the back side.
The same way.
Gotcha. Here I have a very dense spacing of magnetic fields, and so they're all completing inside the steel.
Inside the steel, correct.
Do I understand magnets?
You do.
Excellent.
I understand polymagnets.
Polymagnets.
Let's say you have a piece of steel that's a certain thickness, and you want to attach this 1-inch magnet to it. Engineers first design and print the magnetic field, and then put both the magnet and the steel into this pull test machine to quantify the exact force versus distance curve. If they want to, they can then change the magnetic field and tailor it until they get the exact force curve they're looking for. This ability to manipulate the strength of the magnetic field, coupled with a really clever geometry, allows you to create fascinating magnetic behaviors. For example, these magnets, they're attracted to each other, but they don't touch. They stop just a few millimeters away and seem to hover. This behavior is what they call a spring.
These are springs.
Uh-huh.
All right, this is a spring that's a little bit different. It's a little more complex and can be used as a latch. So you see that it acts as a spring. So if you think about it, let's say like a cabinet door closure.
Uh-huh.
You could have a cabinet door that came together in a kind of soft close with some shock absorption, but then you could twist it to latch and hold strong.
No way. So I can pull against you like
sure.
that. I close it, and then when I turn it,
locks into place.
That's ridiculous. Time out. This is way different in your hands than it is on a video. Attraction and repulsion in the same axis. And then you rotate and you can't pull it apart. Now, we know that any sufficiently mature technology looks like magic until you understand exactly how it works. Watch the faces of my highly educated engineering coworkers as I put this in their hands.
What's going on there?
I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
That is weird. How does that work?
Ooh, it catches. I have no clue.
So if it's not magic, how does it work?
You have that locking point where it holds tightly, but then you turn past the detent and it will hold in that spring location.
That's genius. That's going to change doorknobs. I really think it is. Are you excited about that?
We like this one a lot.
Jason agreed to let David show me some of the special machines in the back that they invented to program magnets. They look just like 3D printers, only you load a blank magnet and it can create whatever magnetic field you can imagine. While we waited the 5 or so minutes it takes for these things to run, I went back out and met more magnet geeks and tried to learn more lingo.
You said a maxel?
A maxel.
A maxel is a what?
It's a magnetic pixel.
Really?
Yeah.
And so a magnetic pixel would be a node inside the magnet that's printed. So the image that you just printed is created by magnetic pixels or maxels.
More or less.
Can we go look at it?
Oh, yeah.
Think about these maxels. Somehow this machine creates north and south polarized maxels inside the magnet. You can add these pixels up to basically make images that can create forces. If you couple one image with a complementary image, you can then create incredible three-dimensional behaviors. This technology is so new, there hasn't even been enough time to think through all the different applications. I think it's a game changer. I'd love to hear what you think in the comments, and please consider passing this video along to all your smart friends to see what they think.
So this is the smarter everyday magnet.
Yeah, so we'll...
Oh, man. So you could make a marble track. Could you do that?
Give me big enough magnets.
This is bizarre. All right, so here we go. Smarter every day. We have a marble. And it follows the field lines.
So there you go. The entire foundation of magnetic circuit design technology just changed. And I'm not going to lie. It makes me look at magnets just like I did when I was a little kid.
Okay, my parents worked at that plant growing up to support the family. I choose to be an engineer and make YouTube videos at night. So, let's don't make this part weird, because you're smart people, you know how this works. Smarter Every Day is supported by Audible.com, and I would love it if you decided to support Audible so they wanted to continue supporting Smarter Every Day. You know what's going on. Oh wait, look at this! A printed magnet telling you the promo code. If you want to get a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/smarter. I actually use this. I'm not just telling you to do something because, you know, they support Smarter Every Day. This is something that will actually make you smarter every day. So, if you want to support Smarter Every Day, go to audible.com/smarter. Get a book of your choice. I would like that. Also, I want to thank Polymagnets, the group that actually makes these things, for printing all the crazy stuff. This is an untapped potential. The medical field? What could they use this technology for? It's pretty impressive. Anyway, go to check out their website. They have some really cool features on there. That's it. If this earned your subscription, feel free to do that. But if not, I just want you to get smarter every day. I'm Destin. Have a good one.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. So today, got Thomas on here, and maybe Raymond will pop in here at some point, and we're going to talk about some magnets and some modern gizmos that people are working on. First thing I want to mention is Nerd Rage out there on YouTube did a video here not too long ago about make a tritium nuclear battery or radioisotope photovoltaic generator. And essentially what he did was took some little radioactive tritium cells and stacked them up on a couple cheap little solar panels like you find in them lawn and garden solar deals, and was able to get a small voltage generated using the radioactive material to energize the solar panels. Anyway, it's pretty nifty little concept that he had going on. And then Laser Saber, who was always working on these little easy spin motors, really low voltage motors that will run for a long time, some just off of small capacitors and such. Once you charge it up, they are like little pulse motors and they'll run for a really long time. I think not positive on the actual time, but the last time I heard he had one that ran for over a year, possibly 2 years. I'll have to check in on that, but nonetheless he finally got an ultra low powered motor working and basically 3D prints these motors. And this time around he used the battery that Nerd Rage put together. So essentially what he's got is an ultra-low powered motor, I mean, working in the microamp range, and this thing is running. So with the radioactivity, I'm not exactly sure what the lifespan of tritium is. This thing could potentially run for years. It's a pretty amazing little gizmo that he's got going on, but he 3D, like I said, he 3D printed that, and using small magnets and all that stuff together, made a pretty impressive little motor that he calls an easy spin. The reason I'm bringing that up is because these easy spin motors obviously don't have a lot of torque, but nonetheless he's able to get them to be so incredibly efficient that they're able to run for long periods of times on small amounts of voltages. And so I'm always saying on here that if you can build it on one scale, you can scale it up or you can scale it down, which I fully believe. But the tritium battery that Nerd Rage put together, and that in combination with each other, could potentially unlock some information that one day would really, you know, open the holy grail of free energy, so to speak. You know, they say perpetual motion isn't possible, but I don't think the right combinations have been hit yet. Which brings me to my next subject. The in the world of alternative energy, if you look around, you'll find that they have all kinds of different people who are working on permanent magnet motors, where they're using the magnetic flux, the repulsions, opposites attract, and positives repel, like poles repel each other. And they've been trying for years to put them in the right configuration to get this repulsion to continuously turn something. There's a lot of gizmos out there that they already claim that they were able to do this, and they look pretty impressive, but once again, when you're talking about alternative energy or free energy or zero point or over unity or anything like that, you always have to be skeptical because people like to put electric motors inside stuff and, you know, try to do crazy stuff. But, what'd you say?
And batteries.
Oh yeah, and batteries inside there. But my kind of view on this thing is, even with batteries, if you could build a battery such as a tritium nuclear battery like that on that small scale, and you was able to utilize what the shenanigans of the hoaxers out there as far as free energy goes did, you could make a long-term, super-efficient electric generator out of this deal. Now, see, when I talk about all these different scam artists out there that are doing their videos out there trying to tell everybody they've got free energy, a lot of times some of the tricks that they put in there, you know, to basically scam somebody, I pay attention to. Laser Saber was able to get a what he calls the easy spin motor to run off of really small voltages. So imagine if you could scale up the work that between him and Nerd Rage, what they've done together, scale that work up to a larger size deal. Now you got a battery that will last for a long time, because as that radioactive material is decaying, as long as that battery isn't going to be harmful, you know, to humans or whatever, as far as radiation, which I don't believe it is because of the slow decay rate or whatever, it's usually really hot radioactive rods that you got to worry about. But even that, in a shielded environment, could produce a battery that would be a long-lasting battery. Now, I always talk about NASA, I always give a NASA heck, but if they literally built a thermoelectric generator that lasted for 9 years going through space to get all the way down to Pluto and then take a picture and send it back, that is an impressive lifespan of a battery. You know, if you, even if you was using that constant use all the way there and all the way back, or whatever, just all the way there. That 9 years is a long time for a battery to last. And so I don't know when the cutoff line for over unity or 0 point or anything like that, which I'm not even looking for. I'm talking about free energy. But if you have a battery that will last anywhere, whatever the half-life of any radioactive material would be, some of them in 1,000 years that they're, you know, still deteriorating or, what's the word I'm looking for? Decaying, radioactive decay, which releases energy. Some of them are doing it for hundreds to thousands of years. So if it lasts 100 years, that's past my lifetime. That to me would be classified more than free energy. So this whole deal about perpetual motion not being possible, I just feel like it's not even, they haven't got the right pieces of the puzzle together in order to make something long-term like that. If anybody ever stumbles onto one, I think Laser Saber over there off of YouTube, he's pretty doggone close to it, because this system that he got from you know, the idea for using tritium to make a battery. Thomas, do you happen to know the lifespan of tritium?
I've heard people say 20 years, but that's, I think, expected luminosity, so you can see it in the dark. Yeah. They're basically, most of those ratings are usually from people who are talking about gun sights and stuff like that, where they put the little white dot on the front of the barrel and two of them on the back. Line them up. Well, they're replacing those white dots with tritium so that you can see it even in the dark without any batteries or anything like that. You just have a constant source.
So do you think the radioactive decay with the solar panel is because of the glow-in-the-dark portion of it, or do you think it is because of the actual radiation itself that's causing the solar panel to put off a charge?
Oh, it's probably the light that's being emitted. The radiation's just being absorbed by the phosphorescent material, and the phosphorescent material, when it releases that energy, it releases it as photons instead of radiation. Instead of invisible radiation, it's coming out of visible light radiation.
So, remember the glow-in-the-dark powder that you gave to me?
Yeah.
Do you think that would actually put a charge on a solar panel, even if it's only in the microvolts or millivolts or whatever?
If it has enough input to get it to glow, yeah.
All right, well, either way...
Actually, I know, because I've tested out the solar cells, I just didn't get as effective of a reading as I wanted for converting UV during the day into visible light without blocking the visible light. So particles are too big. Got to find a way to get my hands on some much, much smaller, like nanodots of it for that.
Yeah, so what, I guess
if we're charging it up during the day and then getting a little power out of it at night after the sun goes down, it still works fine.
Yeah. I guess what I'm getting to, because, you know, I'm always talking about adding this combination with that combination, I'm wondering about this this powder, which you can charge up with ultraviolet light. And so,
right,
if you had this tritium and you had this powder mixed together, so that when this thing's doing its radioactive decay, whether or
that's
not...
That's what the glow sites are made out of, dude.
Huh?
They're literally using a fluorescent pigment and then mix it with tritium, because tritium doesn't put any light off. So they mix it with a phosphorescent pigment, and it basically irradiates the phosphorescent material, causing it to release light constantly.
Cool. So
the stuff you're buying... The stuff you're buying that lights up is not pure tritium.
Right.
Pure tritium, actually just, what was it, helium-3, I think, that's radioactive. It's basically from a nuclear test site or something, and it gets fused into the sand, so you end up with this glass that has radioactive isotopes embedded in it.
So, if the possibility for this to last 20 years, up to 20 years, or... You know, even a year, 2 years, I don't care. Regardless, if the possibility of this lasting for up to 20 years, let's just say hypothetically 20 years, you could literally create a 3D filament mixing this with some of the different types of plastics out there, or, you know, things that are like when they do fiber optics or stuff like that, and be able to 3D print batteries using this material. You see what I'm saying? That you can have multiple layers of this, and then, you know, have it encased where inside of it, it'd actually glow if you was looking inside of it, just like the tritium does, but it would be putting off a charge. You see what I'm saying? Maybe add that in with the supercapacitor technology, to where the tritium batteries literally charging capacitors basically on demand while you're running low voltage devices. What do you think?
Well, for low usage, yeah. I mean, we've got enough. That's the thing, is making the isotopes or making radioactive substances not cheap.
No.
So this is just a waste product left over from something somebody already blew a bunch of money on. But we have a ton of radioactive material that green reactors put out all the time, so it wouldn't be useful for carrying around on you. But, we could encase that in something to retard the radioactive radiation coming from it, to do what you're talking about, and, you know, build the solar cells and everything else into it, and then just bury them under roads.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about.
Yeah, you'd have enough power, you could literally have a way station, you just pull over and plug your car, your electric car in, and charge it up, you know?
See, that'd be cool. Roads that charge your car for you.
Yeah. Well, and it would be good storage to get rid of it all while it's decaying and becoming safe to basically release back into the environment.
Yeah. Well, either
like
way,
turn it into something useful.
Either way, so now you got, we got like, we just discussed probably three different deals. One being the battery, one being able to 3D print the battery if you had access to the right materials, and then the design like he was using for the easy spin motor. Taking those three things right there, and then throwing into the mix the new battery or new magnet technology that they're working on, which is part of that podcast that I just played a little bit ago, that they're literally able to make designer magnets. There's one video that I posted a long time ago out here, Tractor Beam Magnet, to where they were able to set this magnet up so that they would come in close proximity to each other, but they wouldn't make no contact. And so you could sit there and drag this this magnet around with another magnet that was, you know, not there. If you've ever played around with magnets, you see that they, you get them close to each other, they'll slap together, and then that's that. But this one here would bring it in close, but it wouldn't. They wouldn't ever allow it to make contact. Now, if you were going to build a permanent magnet motor, and all magnet motors to get motion, and you were able to literally custom print the holy grail of magnets, which would be a monopole magnet, that you'd be able to take that magnet and have a constant force pushing away from each other, and that's what would necessarily be needed to make a all magnet motor that would be guaranteed to work. Because the opposites will always push each other away, and if you've got like a bearing in the center of a wheel, and you've all you got all these magnets trying to push each other away in the right configuration, that thing would never stop turning until the magnetism wore off. How long would that be? That's a good question.
Well, I'm seeing that you're making the same. You're suffering from the same logical fallacy that almost every single magnet motor designer has ever run across, which is that they keep forgetting that if it's repelling away from it in the direction you want it to repel, it's going to repel away from it in the opposite direction too as it's approaching it. So you're not getting a positive net gain out of it. It's a neutral net gain minus whatever losses from friction and air resistance and all that nonsense. So you can't point a magnet. It's a sphere of energy that rolls off of the surface of the magnetic material. And if the material is not, if it's got a big enough flat surface area, then you just end up with, like, you know, a flat block with rounded corners. You have to think of it like the way gravity affects water on the planet. It's going to spread out and roll out evenly around the entire surface of the center of that gravitational field, and push up as far as that energy level is available to it.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I still believe it's possible in the right configuration.
It is possible, but you have to break that mold and stop presenting that theory so that people will stop using it, because none of these other people have caught on to this either.
What theory are you talking about? Like the monopole magnet portion of it?
Any magnetic field. It doesn't matter. Any magnetic field you put together has a repulsion and an attraction side.
Yeah, well, that's
the opposing magnetic field. It's still, when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, the north and south field coming off of magnet are just basically a bubble of energy that wrap around the entire magnet, and one side is spinning one direction while the other side is spinning the other direction, just like if you're standing pointed off the north pole of the planet, you're rotating in one direction standing still. If you're on the south pole, you're rotating the opposite direction because your position in relation to the planet has changed, not because the rotation direction has changed.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but my point that I'm getting to is that if you watch some of these videos of where they got magnets, when, like, they'll have the V-shaped one where when the magnet comes through there, it makes it all the way through the track until it gets to the back end of that magnet and then stops.
Right, because it's the attraction side is hooked up to it, and it's basically being drawn in to the magnets that are closer to it as it goes down the V.
Yeah, well, the concept of the
end, right, when it gets to the end, it's still attracted to that last bit, but there's nothing to continue attracting it further down.
Yeah, but the concept of the monopole magnet is that it doesn't have the opposite field off of it to track back once it finally gets to the end.
That doesn't matter. You'd just be going in the opposite direction until you hit the end, and then it would stop.
Well, I still believe in the right configuration that it can be done.
See, look, the V, just to give you a quick rundown on the V formation, you'd start at the small end and it would push away from the small end toward the large end, but when you got to the end of the large end, you're back at the small end and you'd ram right into that magnetic field and it wouldn't be able to jump over that magnetic spot. You see what I mean?
Yeah, unless the small end made it all the way back around to the big end, like the rotors that they've got going on there. But the
No, that's what I'm saying. When you get all the way back around to the other end, you're eventually going to hit the small end. You have to come back to that to start the process over, and that's where your sticky point is, because you're ramming into a wall now. Before, the wall was behind you, squeezing you like a grape between two fingers, pushing you forward. Now it's literally like a straight, flat wall that you're just slamming right into head first.
Yeah, well, either way, I believe that with the way to literally design... where those magnetic particles and where the fields are going to be on that magnet, that you could literally design a way to get past that sticking point. And if they ever manage to do that, then that would completely change the game as far as proving whether or not perpetual motion or anything like that was even possible, self-running machines or whatever. You know, there's a lot of different uses for magnets. Magnets, even something as simple as hanging a picture on a refrigerator. That magnet will stay up on that refrigerator for years. There's a force holding that doggone picture to the refrigerator. And so, you know, there's something going on there. Now, if you can get down to the point where you actually understand what is actually occurring in that magnetic field and be able to manipulate that at your will or whatever, there's machines that could be designed that would boggle the mind. The magnetic field, we can create an artificial magnetic field using copper and electricity, and we actually use magnets to, energize the electron flow inside the copper in order to be able to produce electricity to begin with. So the whole deal is, if you can produce electricity, and then you got a way to run that power back into itself. I think I just lost Thomas, unless he hung up and calling somebody else. Anyway. So what I'm saying is, if you had the capabilities, which they do now, obviously, of printing out your own customized magnets with your own customized fields and stuff like that, you could literally turn these magnets into gears. That when these gears interact with each other, they would try to get away from each other or try to realign each other, but never be able to do that, which would produce a propulsion. So, I don't know where Thomas went. Let me see what happened here. Maybe his Skype crashed on him. I'll call them both back. That's terrible for live radio. I lost you. Are you back?
You don't read very well, do you?
What?
I sent you a message that said I'd be right back, so that way I didn't have to interrupt you. And you heard me tippy tapping, so you should have read it.
Oh.
I will be back.
I just got yelled at on air. Ain't that nice? Alright, well, anyway, if you can 3D print magnets and produce, anything even remotely close to a monopole magnet, I believe that you get past that cogging effect that happens with magnets trying to reattract themselves back together. And so all these different devices out there that people have started to build might be able to be improved upon and actually one day function fully, so that you literally have a perpetual motion device, which science says isn't possible. But if you watch, I'll watch all these different videos of all the different interactions between magnets, the things that they are capable of, the lens effect, like how magnet, you can drop a magnet down a copper tube and it just drags along, and any other thing you drop down that copper tube with gravity pulling it through there will go through there really fast, but the magnet will literally basically just float down the tube. And people have been using magnets to spin past copper in order to produce a heating effect using the same Lenz law and eddy currents and such. And also, as well, the doggone induction heaters that they use to heat metal, and the oh, doggone it, that blew my mind out of the gate there. Let me take a quick music break and get my brain back together. Hate it when that happens. Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Can you remember?
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Hello, everybody. Sorry about that. Looks like I'll be going it alone. No biggie. Anyway, so basically what I was trying to say is that if you can basically design your own designer magnets and be able to get them to be, you know, monopole or even to the point where you can actually use them for gears, so to speak. If you look at that one video on how they were actually being able to put the magnetic flux lines where they wanted to, that's what I'm talking about. And then if you look back onto the 3D printed nuclear tritium easy spin motor that Laser Saber put together, and you see how this thing functions, I'm really going to be curious to see how long this thing actually runs by itself. They've made, between him and Lid Motor, have actually made some pretty impressive little motors that have run for a long time. Some of them just off of ambient light, just in the room. And so the closer and more experiments that people do like that, eventually somebody's going to stumble on to what would be classified as free energy. Now, I already know free energy exists, and I've been battling back and forth with people, terminology or whatever, trying to explain how it actually could be possible that somebody could do this. But I don't know. You get so many naysayers out there, and so many people who, you know, want to quote the laws of physics and say, "Well, you can't do that. It's against the second law of thermodynamics or whatever." I don't believe them, and I never will believe them, because of the things that I've seen things in my lab that they swore up and down were impossible. And so I know that at some point when the right technology comes available, there will be self-generating machines out there that will use all the different laws of physics in conjunction with one another. And even probably have to write some new laws of physics because of new things discovered. You know, when you talk about nuclear power and how they actually go about, taking uranium or whatever out of the ground and refining it into highly radioactive rods, and then they say that these things have a half-life of 1,000 years or more, and some of them even longer than that. That the decay rate of these things, they'll be releasing energy for years. If you take just a magnet alone, the magnets, I've seen magnets on the refrigerator for 20, 30 years or more, whatever, until somebody does something to that magnet, gets it too hot, or, you know, drops it one time too many and it starts to lose its magnetism and won't stick to the refrigerator any longer. Nonetheless, there's a force holding that thing up. And whenever you get to the point where you understand that force enough to where you can now manipulate magnetic forces and design your own magnets, then at that point you could get the propulsion that that everybody's been wanting to try to get. Now, I've seen a lot of magnet motors out there, and there's a lot of them that I don't believe work, but there are a lot of them that they're just right on the edge of working. And all they need is one little kick over the deal. And I don't care if it's got a hidden motor inside of it. If the thing has a hidden motor or a hidden battery inside of it, I said hidden motor, sorry, I just kind of like, I hate it when I have a hassle on my radio show because it always blows my brain out of water. But nonetheless, even the ones with hidden batteries inside there, those batteries just get that doggone thing right over the edge, and it makes that thing so incredibly efficient that it continues to run. And there's a way that you can actually tap into some of that energy as it's spinning to put energy back into whatever power cell that it's using to kick it over the deal. And that means you have extended the life of what it's doing. And so I fully believe that it is possible to literally build a device that would be self-contained. Even taking in consideration, you put solar on there, you put wind power on there, all these extras that you put in there. See, one anomaly by itself may not be able to do it, but many anomalies together in the right configuration, I believe, will actually one day show exactly what it is that I've been saying all along. You know, if you take one gear out of any machine, the machine won't function any longer. Not the way it's supposed to function anyway. Something won't be working. And the same thing would apply to all these different anomalies that I've been sharing with you for years on the Mad Science Show. All the different little things that you see, these nifty tricks. When I put those videos in there about magnet tricks and stuff like that, and tractor beam magnets and stuff, all these are just little pieces of the puzzle that when you take them in conjunction with one another, you can use this one with that one to do certain things. Now, they've got magnets that they've printed up that they can literally use like locking magnets, when they'll hold themselves close together and but not touch, and then when you spin it in a certain direction, then they'll actually come in there and lock. Well, that tells me that if you had those things set just right, that you would be able to cause this thing to continuously try to align itself. And I don't understand why people can't seem to grasp that concept. If you look at all the different things out there, you know, Raymond's always talking about the drinking bird deal, how it works. You know, it heats up and it goes down, and the material goes into the water, and then it cools it back down, and then it goes back up, and it's using temperature out there. So it's something that if right conditions, it would continue to go. It wouldn't stop. And so, to me, that's right on the edge of perpetual motion. And they say that perpetual motion isn't possible. But I still honestly believe that they haven't put the things in the right configuration is the reason why they haven't been able to get these devices to function the way they're talking about. Now, there's also the deal where you can never get out more than you put in, kind of thing, you know. Well, okay, maybe we're not trying to get out more than we put in, but maybe we're trying to utilize this work to do something else at the same time. Like, if you had something, one of the motors that Lid Motor had made one point in time, he had a, I think it was actually a Laser Saber that did it, that made a static motor that actually had a fan on there. And that was using static electricity to turn a fan blade that would actually be circulating air around. Taking that technology right there and mixing it with the Van de Graaff or the Wimshurst style generator, probably best with Wimshurst, because Wimshurst doesn't have near the friction as Van de Graaff. Van de Graaff basically taking a rubber belt and using friction to produce static electricity, whereas the Wimshurst is actually using the friction of the air atmosphere around it to do the same thing, to produce a static charge. And so the less friction that you have, the longer you'd be able to get this thing to go. And if you was able to produce enough static charge to continue to run that static motor, then you would literally have perpetual motion right there and then. And there's different types of materials out there that are really good for static electricity, you know, and they don't take a lot of friction in order to be able to exchange the electrons the way that, you know, a regular generator or something like that would have to, you know, overcome some force, like the lens effect whenever you're producing, you know, electricity using induction. When you allow those electrons to make the flow back into the same generator that you're trying to get the electricity out of, then that's when the problem starts. So, according to physics, energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed. So, if you're able to not be able to make a self-running generator because of the lens effect, and you're able to take that energy off of that generator and put it into a completely different form of electricity so that it's not able to go back into the generator. It doesn't even have to be electricity. Just a completely different form of energy, such as heat. Transfer that heat out and away and then be able to bring that heat right back around and exchange it back into usable electricity again. But once again, the critics will come up out of the wall and they will say things like, well, you know, you can't do that because you got all these losses. There's losses. When you go to change that to, you'll never get out more than you put in or whatever, enough to come around and whatever. I don't care if it even just basically compensates to extend the life of the battery in the device in question. All of them have a tipping point. They got a sweet spot in there. Even the magnet motors got a sweet spot in there. If you can get past that one little spot right there, and even if it's an outside force such as a solar panel that requires the extra boost in order to get you past that one spot, you know, if the heat that you could generate using the same device could literally, produce pressure, which in turn you could utilize that pressure, there might be a case of where over-unity would be possible. There is a video out there where they talk about a water hammer effect, where he built this rotor, and by spinning the water around, producing a vortex, gets the water molecules slamming into each other and produces friction, which in turn produces heat, and at some point actually produces steam. And so the guy did a lot of measurements on there, and according to his calculation, got out more energy than he was putting in the form of BTUs. So at some point, I don't care what science says, that, you know, the laws of physics aren't written in stone. Everything's all theoretical. And the fact that you've got a magnet that will hold power for many, many years, there's some force in there that's making that magnet do what it does. Having the flux lines north and south, and we figured out that if we take those magnets like that and we spin them past a coil of wire, that constant changing between north and south rocks the electron loose. It produces electron flow and actually generates electricity. And we've actually been able to replicate that to some extent using things like the transistors and MOSFETs, where we're literally pulsing coils and producing a magnetic field that's collapsing from north to south, back and forth, Tesla coil technology and such, and able to energize the air atmosphere around to where you now are causing a reaction in like fluorescent lighting, or any of the noble gases could be energized into the plasma state using artificial magnetic fields that are generated using electricity. Of course, you got to generate the electricity first in order to be able to produce the magnetic field. But nonetheless, using all these ideas together instead of, you know, saying, well, you know, this one here falls short and you'll never be able to get that, and then you got all these losses, all the naysayers out there against free energy or alternative energies, why they say that they're not efficient or not going to do the job right or whatever. We got so many different materials possible right now, and more on the way as far as that goes. But at some point, you should be able to take all these pieces of the puzzle and put them together and build a self-contained device. You know, you can take and charge the batteries up during the daytime with the sun, store that energy and use the energy through to the night whenever the doggone sun isn't out. And so they say that, well, you know, you only half the day you're getting usable electricity. Well, no, there's been situations where during the daytime you don't even need the batteries to run it, what your inverters that are running all the, because of the size of the panel system that's set up. So you're charging the batteries while you're using electricity during the daytime and being able to use it at night. So to me, that made it yet even more efficient. But what if you could actually find the right light spectrum that was actually the one responsible for causing the solar panels to actually generate electricity to begin with? Then using things like what Lid Motor and or Laser Saber and Nerd Rage did with the tritium, and be able to have that solar panel be able to not only charge when the sun's out, but even be able to charge when it's dark out as well. Because there's nothing to say that you can't put a light source behind the solar panel as well as on the front of the solar panel. So if you got light refracting through the solar panel generating energy, and then that light is bounced back through the same solar panel generating yet even more electricity, it just became even more efficient. So if you had a material that you could put down there that would be charged up during the daytime, and at night your solar panels would literally glow in the dark, then it would still be producing electricity long after the sun goes down. That's what I've been trying to say to people. And for my efforts, I get a lot of trolls. I get a lot of ruckus over the stuff. You know, whatever. The world said they had an energy problem. The world said that they needed to find clean, renewable, alternative energy sources. And so I threw my hat in the ring and I said, look, you got this over here, you got that over there, you take this and put it with that, and then you got what you need. And man, I never thought I would ever see so much resistance against free energy. I never thought that in my lifetime, of all the different people that claim that they needed science's help to figure things out, that they would ever create such resistance. And it's aggravating. You know, I even find it within my own circles. Oh, no, you're wrong about this. Well, you know, look, I wish I could plug my brain into a doggone computer monitor so you could actually physically see the machinery working in my mind. And then turn around and try to explain to me why it is that you believe that it's not possible. I mean, I studied mechanics. I understand how things work. I understand you turn this gear this way and that gear will go that way, and then the next one in line will go the opposite way. And I understand the difference gear ratios, smaller gears as to larger gears, and how to either speed something up or slow it down by the diameter of the gear itself, and it maybe even the number of teeth on the gear. There's so many different factors that fall into play there. And so for people to say that this isn't possible, and I'm sitting here, I'm seeing it mechanically in my mind how it is possible. These folks like Nerd Rage and Laser Saber and even Lid Motor out there are probably three of the best researchers out there. None of them's claiming that they're getting over unity. None of them's claiming perpetual motion. And none of them's claiming free energy. But if anybody ever accidentally stumbles on it, and I forgot one too, doggone it, what's his name? Sky Collection. Sky Collection does all kinds of works with pancake motors and pulse motors and or pancake coils and pulse motors and neodymium magnets and basically making really super efficient gizmos that are running. So my bet is if you put those four people that I just mentioned into a lab, they would come out with a device that would be self-running. There's no doubt in my mind, those four brilliant minds together would resolve all the so-called issues out there why you can't get an energy device that would run itself. And at the very, very least, it would be so incredibly efficient that, it wouldn't even no longer be an issue. And once again, I don't understand where all the all the craziness comes as far as, when you try to talk about free energy devices or potentials therein, that people always got to find some sort of reason why it can't be done. We've got technology right now that where we can literally 3D print motors that have moving parts in there, gizmos that have moving parts in there. We have the technology to literally print our own customized magnets. And so you add all this stuff in conjunction with each other, I guarantee you that free energy is going to stumble out there on the market by accident one day, and people are going to want to try to suppress it. But by the time that happens, the genie will be out of the bottle, Pandora's box will be open, and it's just done deal. There ain't going to be no way to say that it's not possible when people are actually doing it. And when they figure it out, that's when the situation will change. So, I said that I'm going to prove it. 100%, 150,000% beyond a shadow of doubt, I'm going to prove energy's free. And I believe we've already done that over and over and over again, but until you actually get a working device that once you turn it on won't shut off until you decide you want it to shut off, that it will run itself, you get to that point right there, and you utilize every other thing that we've talked about on this deal right here, such as, for example, let's say I get a permanent magnet motor that functions and it will not shut off, but it doesn't have enough torque to turn a generator head. Alright, so we get away from the conventional generator head and we move into static electricity, because static electricity is so prevalent that, you rub your feet on the carpet, you got static electricity. Rub your feet on a balloon, you got static electricity. Rub couple plates in opposite directions through the atmosphere, you got static electricity. There's materials that will develop static electricity, two separate materials, and whatever. And so with that static electricity charge, you're talking about thousands of volts. And so with that said, those thousands of volts equal pressure. And it's pressure that ends up building up that produces the current. When I started off and I said that I don't care about current watts and amps, one of the people in my circle went berserk and created such a ruckus that just basically ripped the dream team apart. And next thing I know, there was a big feud going on and everybody went their separate ways, and it just kind of was counterproductive to the whole thing of bringing them all together to begin with to sit there and troubleshoot ideas. So, I said I didn't care about current watts and amps. And the terminology that I used made so many people mad or frustrated or thought that I didn't know what the heck I was talking about. And so it just blew it all out of water. So I didn't understand the resistance that I was getting from the free energy community. You know, maybe a troll or whatever they call a shield inside there to make sure that if we get anywhere close to where we would be finding actual free energy device, that somebody would disturb it and everybody would go their separate ways and we'd never get the doggone thing done. But when I said I didn't care about current watts and amps, I meant it. Because you can't measure current watts and amps in plasma. You can't do it. The standard measuring devices, they won't register on the standard voltmeter. And so with that said, what's going on there? There's still energy available there. It's not the same energy that you're used to using. There's a guy out there named Gerard Morne. He's kind of rough around the edges, and he cusses people out all the time, but that's why I really hadn't tried to get him on the show, because he's just frustrated. But he's trying to tell people that energy isn't what you think it is, and that there are other forms of energy out there. There's other forms of electricity. Because they're not in a school book, they don't seem to matter. You know, when you talk about AC current or DC current, then people, you know, the mathematics that they use in school, they apply. You talk about AC and DC current, current watts and amps, that math applies. But when you talk about plasma, or even heat for that matter, that math doesn't apply. You can't measure current watts and amps with heat. You have to go to some different form of measurement. And the same thing would apply with any form of energy out there. So if you're able to literally produce a static electric charge with a self-running magnet motor that is spinning through the atmosphere and building up a static charge, you don't have Lenz's law to fight with anymore. You don't have that current flow trying to go back into the same generator that you're trying to pull the energy off of. We could literally build a generating system that the only purpose for the motor itself would be to spin the equivalence of a Wimshurst style generator, or even a Van de Graaff for that matter, as long as the friction was low enough that it wouldn't produce enough heat to cause thermal breakdown in whatever material you're trying to pull the static off of. But I'm thinking the Wimshurst would probably be the best one, because you're actually only using the atmosphere to pick up that charge. And so if you were able to build a generator that would produce a massive amount of high voltage electricity. Oh, I got Jermaine calling in. How you doing there, Jermaine?
Hey, I'm fantastic. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Talking about different things that magnets have, doggone it, different potentials that magnets can be. You know, they got where they can actually build designer magnets now?
Right, yeah.
So what I was talking about earlier was that if you could actually design these magnets to put the poles where you wanted them to, you could literally design the equivalence of a gear, a magnetic gear. You see what I'm saying?
You're right. Just like those hard drive magnets with the two poles next to each other.
Yeah. Have you seen the tractor beam magnets?
Yeah.
They will attract themselves, but never connect.
Right.
And so that's pretty much what they're able to do. It actually can do a lot more than that with the doggone way that they, you know, print these things. They can put a molecule at a time, you know, onto a deal and actually design patterns that when you put a magnet paper on there, I mean, they can write I mean, look, hard drives have been doing it for years. Ones and zeros. Moving ones and zeros around in different combinations on a platter so that you can actually read data off of this thing. When it spins past something, it will detect them. You see what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. Me and Raymond, when Raymond was over here, we did an experiment where we had a Froment motor, which is a motor as a rotor with iron plates that are being attracted by a horseshoe magnet.
Yeah.
And that was okay, but then we said, why don't we just stick on hard drive magnets on those plates? So we get the attraction of the magnets to the magnetic core of the electromagnet, and then just pulse it, and with the same poles as the hard drive magnet, so that kicks it away.
Yeah.
So with the same energy, you can have more torque. You're harnessing the power of the magnets.
Well, that's what I was saying. You know, you see, some people, they like to mince words such as, over unity and zero point. Well, you can never get out more than you're trying to put in and this and that, and you got all these losses and everything. I'm so tired of talking to supposed educated people. It drives me insane because they look past all the different anomalies and all the possibilities of what you can do with those anomalies. If you just with what you explained right there, you could make a more powerful, more efficient electric motor. Am I wrong?
Right. No.
Well, then you take all these things that we've seen in these different videos, things like what Laser Saber and Nerd Rage did. Nerd Rage took some radioactive glow-in-the-dark material, put it, sandwiched them between two solar panels. Huh?
And made a nuclear battery.
Yeah. And then Laser Saber took that design that Nerd Rage did, and he hooked it up to one of his 3D-printed easy-spin motors, and now he's got a motor that who knows how long that thing has spun. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I'm saying free energy's on its way. There ain't no ifs, ands, or buts. And there ain't nobody who can dispute it. At least not with me. I mean, they can tell me that all they want. But from what I've seen and my mechanical knowledge in my head, I know that you put this piece with that piece and you got better efficiency. And even if you get down to where you got only 99% efficient.
Look right.
The internal combustion engine's only like 30% or 40% efficient. Might be less than that.
I don't know about a four cylinder piston engine. I think it's about, maybe 20% or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe 12 to 20%.
So that leaves a whole lot of room for improvement. Now imagine,
yes,
if you make that thing, if it's only 12 to 20% efficient, imagine if you make that thing to where it's 70 or 80% efficient of how much fuel you would save just running that.
Right.
So if somebody had a generating system and you made that thing 80% efficient, and normally they'd spend a couple hundred dollars a month for fuel to keep it running, and now they only have to spend a fraction of that, Isn't that the step forward towards the goal of becoming self-sufficient that everybody keeps talking about they want?
Yep.
So, you take that...
Yeah, but there are a lot of videos of people that make free energy devices, which is actually true. They can get energy of something they don't need to pay any money for.
Yeah.
But a lot of people say, oh yeah, but you're putting or something is happening that is converting it to your energy. That's true, but he doesn't pay anything for it. I think free energy has got a bad name.
Yeah.
A bad meaning, if you know what I mean.
Well,
people
get
called out for something that's not free energy, but come on now.
They twisted the terminology. Like, yeah. I'm always saying, when's the last time you got a bill from the sun? Literally.
Right.
Or the wind, yeah. Or even the water, or even the earth for that matter. So, yeah. the people that say free energy is impossible just did not pay attention in science class. It's as simple as that. And they find the pettiest little things to try to pick it apart, and because of shenanigans like what Keshi's doing out there ripping people off, they're discounting exactly what it is that they said they needed. Is that crazy?
Yes, it is. It is.
So I've come up against, even in my own circle, I've got people mad at me, like I mentioned earlier, about saying I don't care about current watts and amps. If you got a heater and you're just trying to measure the energy of the heat alone, your regular voltmeter ain't going to measure that heat. You know? But they have thermal meters that will register the heat. But it's a completely different measurement. So, in their own laws of physics, says energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can be changed to other forms of energy. So, if I take this energy off a generator, instead of trying to run it direct like I would be before, change it to a completely different form, now I've just skipped a step as far as the lens effect. Whenever you try to pull energy off of that generator through a load, it starts to send electrons back into the same generator you're trying to pull the energy off of, and so it's going to bog down.
Right.
But if you change it to heat, that heat's not going to bog it down. You see what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And so if I don't care about current watts and amps, because I don't, because voltage is pressure, and pressure is what builds up that causes the current flow to begin with. So at this point in the game, if I'm taking this energy and I'm changing it to a completely different form of energy, then your measurements that you learned in school, they don't apply.
Right.
And you can measure the BTUs, but here's the thing. If I'm not trying to get out more than I put in, if this generator head is capable of producing, let's say, 2,500 watts, all right? So it's able to produce 2,500 watts, and I turn that 2,500 watts into plasma, all right? Now I've generated a whole bunch of heat. But that generator is never going to bog down, and it will always be able to produce that 2,500 watts constant, right or wrong.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
So as long as you never put that generator head under a load, it will always produce what it's capable of producing, which is 2,500 watts.
And it never creates a lens effect because you're not evoking it. You're just, you're not... You're turning it into something that has nothing to do with the lens effect. You just change it to a different form that doesn't, create the lens effect.
That's right. You're not defying the laws of physics. You're not defying the lens effect. You're just not invoking it. You're taking that energy and putting it into something completely different. So what you end up with, even if you end up with a slight loss because of the process by which you took this energy off of it, you started off with 2,500 watts and now you're producing a certain amount of BTUs that would equal up to slightly less than 2,500 watts, you're still more efficient energy-wise than you was before when you were trying to pull a direct load off of it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because the moment I turned a light bulb on, I invoked Lenz's law, and it made that thing less efficient. So now, whatever the efficiency of that generator head under a load would have been, I just got more power out than I would have got out before.
Right.
That's what I've been trying to tell people, Jermaine, and they look at me all cross-eyed and give me a rash. That's why I don't care about current watts and amps, because what I'm talking about, current watts and amps do not apply until you get to the other side where you convert it back into energy that you want to run the inefficient junk that we do run.
Right.
And at that point, then you can run your measurements again, but nonetheless, you're still going to find out that it is more efficient doing it that way than it was the initial way where you had that generator under a direct load.
Right.
So,
but like you said, I think it also has to do with the terminology people think they know.
Yep.
It really, you know, yeah.
Well, terminology drives me nuts. People turn and twist it, and I'm trying to sit there and explain to something in a basic sense, which, if you didn't try to overanalyze what it was that I was saying, and you just listened to the basic mechanics of it, what I just told you, does it or does it not sound plausible according to the laws of physics and basic science?
Right, it does. It
yeah.
Does.
I'm not putting this generator under direct load. I'm taking that energy off the generator. I'm changing it to a completely different form of energy so as not to invoke Lenz effect. And on the opposite side, once I turn it into back into usable AC or DC current, then you can run your math.
Right.
And at that right. point, you'll find out that the math on that side is going to be more efficient than doing it the old way. So it's just a new way of actually utilizing the same energy. We just converted it to a different type of energy. So therefore, in that middle process, the measurements didn't matter. Because you can't measure plasma with a voltmeter. You
right.
see what I'm saying? You'll need some sort of thermal meter to read that measurement, and then do your math calculations BTU-wise as opposed to current watts and amps.
Right.
But that's, you know, that's what I'm up against. You know, I, like I said, I can't believe that people out there continuously say they want clean, renewable, alternative energy to be self-contained, self-sufficient, or even free energy or whatever, and they give you that much of a hassle to try to get the process done.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Jermaine, right now we have every single piece of the puzzle necessary. It's just a matter of arranging those pieces in the right order to get them to do what it is that we wanted.
It's just thinking outside the box. About thinking outside the box, we'd all do the same thing over and over again, not improving on any of it.
Yep. We're still
but
using...
People are so brainwashed that the quote-unquote original way is the best way.
Yep. We're still using energy, a form of energy that was discovered in the 1800s. And that was based off of energy that was pulse that was discovered before that. And even static electricity before that.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're literally, to this very day, still using ancient technology to turn turbines that turn generator heads. Because, you know, when you're using nuclear power, you're using steam power because you're using the nuclear reaction of the radioactive rods decaying to boil water.
Right.
If you're running a coal-fired power plant, and you're still boiling water to produce steam pressure. Now, I'm saying that if you take this same technology and you, instead of using radioactive material, you use plasma for your heat, then you don't have the radioactive problem anymore, and you don't have the carbon problem anymore. You're just using the plasma, which everybody who knows anything about plasma cutters understand. Plasma actually uses the atmosphere around it to cut through steel. Do you know that?
Yep, yep.
So, you take that, that's a lot of heat. You take everything you've learned from basic science and physics and what you've learned from nature, and you use it in the most efficient common sense manner. And that's why I call it mad science, because it makes me mad that we got all the answers, yet we can't get people to stop trolling or, you know, trying to discourage.
Yeah.
This is telling
that's
me
why it's really key to sit to be in a community that understands each other and
That's like telling me you want my advice on something, and then whenever I give you the answer, you cuss me out because you don't like what I said. Don't ask me for my advice, you know, and then you won't be disappointed by what I say. Well, when the world asks for clean, renewable alternative energy, somebody stepped forward, a whole bunch of somebodies in the background stepped forward, and then the answers that they came up with, like Stan Myers running a car off of hydrogen and oxygen. All right, well, you realize how many people right now honestly believe that was, a hoax or a conspiracy or whatever, because people told them it wasn't possible. And even the Mythbusters, who I used to really respect and I like, they tried to debunk dang hydrogen technology, and in the process caused a flashback and then, backfire through the carburetor and said, well, maybe that's why we don't use hydrogen technology. Well, these are supposedly brilliant scientists that didn't understand how volatile hydrogen and oxygen are together in the atmosphere and easily ignited. And they should have known that a flashback arrestor and the proper conditions would have been necessary to avoid that flashback. They knew it. They just wanted to try to debunk it, man.
Right.
So that was being dishonest.
Yeah.
But basic science tells you that water is hydrogen and oxygen. Separate the two and they're both a fuel. Stan Myers was doing it in 1979. Why ain't we doing it here in the 2017? And then you'll actually get knuckleheads out there and say, well, we can't burn water. We'll run out of water. We need all of our water. You know, you can't be putting water in all... Look how many cars are out there. If you got water for fuel in all the cars, then we're all going to die of thirst.
The exhaust gases are water vapor.
Yeah! And the earth is over 3/4 covered in water. Not to mention all the ice.
Right.
Man, I tell you what, that's why I call it mad science, because it really aggravates me to no extent. If you had a hydrogen engine, hydrogen and oxygen engine, you could regulate the temperature with the water so it'd never get too hot, and you'd be able to run it all day long, every day, for pennies, fractions of a penny on a dollar. And it's perfect because it's not polluting the environment. You get fresh water out the other side, and it's just utilizing the energy that nature has provided and turning around and getting work done with it.
Yeah.
So hydrogen technology would be brilliant. Well, here's another thing, too. They always talk about how, well, it takes more power to get this water to separate because water is the most stable molecule on the planet, blah, blah, right? Well, that's pure ridiculousness because Stan Myers was doing it in 79. But, nonetheless, there are other methods besides using electrolysis. Electrolysis is obviously going to be the least efficient manner to get it done.
Yeah.
Because electrolysis draws a lot of amperage.
Yeah. Just like in heater element.
Yep.
It all uses so much amperage. So much.
And that's one of the reasons why they try to say that it's not possible. And even the folks that talk about, you know, getting an internal combustion engine to run off of water, you know, well, you can't do that because of vapor locking or this or that or whatever, you know, second law of thermodynamics. Every time I hear people quote that, it just aggravates me to no extent, because any engine will run off of any fuel that it is specifically engineered to do so with. So you can design an engine that will literally run off of pure distilled water using all the technology that we have available to us right now.
Right.
And have that engine run so incredibly cool that you'd never even have to change the oil on the doggone thing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and this is this new technology, or this, you know, this technology, it may not work with our car, our design, but we need to design something that does work with it.
Yep. Well, compression ignition has been going on since diesel engines were first invented. Because when you start up a diesel engine, and you know you worked on tractors before that's had diesels in them, you've got glow plugs in there. The glow plugs are only used for one purpose. That's to preheat the cylinder. After that cylinder's heated up, then you no longer need the glow plugs. They don't run like spark plugs constantly. They just are used to preheat the cylinder to get it up to operating temperature. Once it's up to operating temperature, the compression of the fuel and the air inside that cylinder maintains that heat inside the cylinder, which causes the diesel fuel to burn.
Right.
Compression ignition.
Right.
And the two-stroke Evinrude boat motor that I'm always talking about, it uses a version of compression ignition and direct injection, and it is the most efficient boat motor out there on the market because it does that. There's actually a doggone snowmobile or a jet ski one, too. I can't remember which one it is that is using pretty much close to the same technology. But if you take everything you've learned from air compressor technology, compression ignition, the internal combustion engine, induction heating, and HVAC heating and cooling, you know, air conditioning and heating, whatever, you take all this knowledge, you have every bit of thermodynamics necessary to literally build an engine that will run off of pure distilled water that will self-regulate its temperature to the extent where if the cylinder starts to get too hot, you use thermodynamics and you put too much fuel into that cylinder and it will instantaneously cool that cylinder down. I know this for a fact because I've done it. When I'm sitting here running these little two-stroke engines and I'm injecting water in, if I get the temperature of that thing up over 200 degrees and you can feel this thing starting to buck, and then once I spray too much fuel in there, the thing will drop. You can sit there and watch the temperature gauge drop down below 200 degrees and it no longer wants to buck. So if I was able to maintain, let's say, a perfect 300 degrees at all times, and as soon as that water was vaporized and injected into that cylinder, it would run. And between the temperature and the compression, it would separate the hydrogen and oxygen on demand, and it would run that engine. Plus, if it ever got too hot, all I'd have to do is repeat the process that was the failure to begin with and put too much fuel in there, and it would cool it back down again.
Right, right.
And what do you get out the exhaust then? Water!
Yeah.
Oh, man. I tried to explain that to a man who is so incredibly smart when it comes to building the modern-day internal combustion engines. He could actually build an engine from scratch in his shop. He had lathes and milling machines, everything necessary, all the measurement equipment, and knew everything there was to know about an internal combustion engine. But when I tried to tell him about how you could actually build an engine that would run off of pure distilled water without any additives to it, well, then the old school book kicked in, and he argued till he was blue in the face. Oh, no, that's not possible. He even actually made a video talking about how it's not possible to run an engine off of water. Basically, made a video and said I was stupid. And the name of his video was called Bollocks or something like that. Anyway, That's the kind of thing you're up against. When you try to talk to people with the college education, you're just you're talking to the wall. It's as simple as that.
Yep.
Because they're not willing to think outside the box.
Right.
Take that energy, change it to a completely different form of energy, or take these magnets, custom design them, designer magnets to work as gears. We know about ferrofluids. We know about magnetic bearings and levitation and all that kind of stuff. We got every single piece of the puzzle, literally, to, if we took the right people and put them in the right lab at the right time with all the material necessary, they would come out of there with the perfect engine.
Strange, isn't it?
Yeah. But they're fighting against it. The people don't want it, I guess. They said they want it. And if you ever proved it, they probably wouldn't believe it anyway. Yeah. You know? It's like whether we did or didn't go to the moon. I couldn't care less. But there's people out there say we did. There's people out there that said we didn't. There are things questionable about it. So, hey, what do you know? These folks out there building these phony free energy devices, all they're doing is making it worse for the guys that are really out there looking for the real solutions.
Yeah.
That's why I call it mad science. The people that ask for free energy are the ones that will fight you the hardest for it.
Yeah.
Against it, you know?
Yeah. It gets a bad name, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to keep doing what it is that I do, but I said, here, I watch guys like Nerd Rage and Laser Saber and Lid Motor making these super efficient, ultra low powered motors that are running for, I think one that Lid Motor had went for a year or two, and Laser Saber has some long lasting ones, and probably even Nerd Rage is probably, I bet Nerd Rage has already got one sitting on there that's been going for many years. Because this guy's really good with chemicals and all kinds of materials, and if anybody was to figure it out, utilizing information that he got from like Laser Saber or Lid Motor on some of these motors that they put together.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, free energy is on its way. It'd be here right now if I had my way about it, because people would actually pay attention to what's going on around them. We'd get it done. But, you know, hey, whatever. You know, if you took two motors and basically took the equivalence of a Van de Graaff generator, you'd be able to produce Wimshurst. I like the Wimshurst because it doesn't rely on the friction portion that a Van de Graaff does.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, if you're able to take these and produce a massive amount of high voltage, you know, up into thousands of volts, you're not going to be able to run your standard appliances or your house off of it. However,
right, because it's designed to work on that.
Yeah. However, you got access now to literally the equivalence of a lightning bolt if you choose to use it. So,
yeah,
that's why I was telling Muddy back there when I was trying to get him to put a prop on that that doggone ceiling fan motor that I put magnets in, shipped down to him. I wanted to put a prop on there to see how high the voltage would actually get, because it wouldn't have to be regulated down, because I'm not worrying about putting too much voltage or current through something. I'm not worried about blowing it up. I want it to get as high voltage as possible. Alright, because that high voltage, I know that I can take that high voltage because of the frequency range of what it is, and I can change it into plasma technology.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
These Beckett oil burner igniters, they still use, I don't know exactly how they're built inside, but my guess is that they're using transistors and induction coils in order to ramp up the voltage with the primary and the secondary in there. Secondary being wound thousands of turns inside there, but nonetheless, you take 12 volts and you can produce 20,000 volts of electricity. Now, you can't take that 20,000 volts and run your standard deal with it, but you can take that 20,000 volts and generate plasma, which in turn can generate heat that you can get the BTUs up there to, I believe, exceed the 12 volts that you put in there.
I like those oil packet burner igniters because they work on straight 12 volts.
Yep. That's why I like it, because I figure if you can't come up with 12 volts in a worst case scenario, I mean, pretty much every neighborhood out there's got an old car battery laying around.
Yeah.
And if you don't have an old car battery, you can make a battery using basic science, such as getting you a couple lead weights and dropping them down into any acid, citric acid, it don't matter. There's so many different things. You could use salt and produce a voltage with just a couple lead fishing weights and some wire.
Right. Yeah.
Now you made a battery. And then you run those in series with each other, and you boost up the voltage and the current flow on it, and now you got a homemade battery that is producing 12 volts, and you take that 12 volts and turn it into high voltage that you can energize plasma. Now you can heat water with the doggone thing, probably heat your house, light your house at the same dang time because of the frequency range. You can take an old dead fluorescent light bulb and still light the thing up because of the high frequency, high voltage. So, worst case scenario, you still got heat and light.
Yeah. I understand you. I understand.
Yep. But now we could get that out there into the mainstream. That's the key right there.
Yeah.
You know, if it wasn't so aggravating to me, it'd be so easy just to say the heck with it, throw my hands up in the air and walk away. But it's the principle of the thing. I'm going to prove 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt free energy. There's no doubt in my mind. I already know it's possible. Now, the key is to take and be able to build a device that can be measured. All right, well, the plasma reactor, you can measure it, but you're not going to measure it in the standard form. Now, you can measure the input side of it with your math, but when you get to the plasma side of it, you got to change your math. And right. Then when you turn around and bring that back over to usable current again, you know, they're always saying, well, you're going to have these losses involved. Have they ever done the math, Jermaine, to see exactly what losses that they're talking about? Because if I am not invoking Lenz's law, then I ain't got no losses in the generator. If I'm taking every bit of energy off of that generator that generator is capable of and changing it to a completely different form, if there are any losses, then it's still going to be a heck of a lot more efficient than me hooking a light bulb directly to that generator.
Right. Indeed, your efficiency gets higher. You still have losses, but not as much, not nearly as much.
No, it's a fraction of what it was before, because what it was before was doing it the wrong way, because you're allowing electron flow to go right back into the same generator head you're trying to pull off of, and the more light bulbs you turn on, the harder that thing has to work. Too many light bulbs, and it'll literally drop on its face. And then it'll get so hot that it'll burn the insulation off of the wiring, and then the generator will burn up.
Yeah.
Do you know you could take any electric motor that has been burned up because it got too hot, you could pull all the copper wire off of there, re-insulate that same exact wire, rewind that motor back, and it will work again?
Just, I know somebody that reduced magnetic flywheels or ignition system from Model T cars.
Yeah.
And they don't use wires, they use strips, they use ribbon wire.
Yeah.
And it's a very weird size, so the guy always cleans them all up and re-insulates them, he repurposes them because it doesn't exist anymore.
Well, see, there you go. There's proof of what I've been saying. The only thing that ever causes an electric motor to go bad is one of two things. Either the wire gets broke or burned in half, or the insulation fails, which causes a dead short. So instead of multiple turns, you're down to one turn, which isn't enough flux with the induction process to be able to cause that rotor to spin. That's it.
Yeah.
There are, in a lot of the vehicles these days, there are electric motors that run the windows up and down. And nine times out of ten, when those things go bad because of the way that they were designed, there's only one thing that ever goes bad with those motors. And so you can take a one of those electric motors out of the window, and you can, they got little tabs on the side. You can bend those tabs out away, pull all the guts up out of there, clean down the grease and the brushes, and then put them all back together with new fresh grease and put it back in your car, and it will start working again, which just saved you anywhere from, if you buy it from a salvage yard, $40 to $100 or more for that little electric motor.
It just takes you a little bit of time.
Yeah, and the motor itself, because of the way they're designed, it didn't get too hot. All it did was that, because it's using carbon brushes to actually go up and down, that constant going forward, raising the window up and going backwards to put the deal down is shaving off carbon off of that, off those brushes and mixing it in with the grease. And that finally gets thick where the grease and the carbon push the brushes away where they're not making a good contact anymore and they fail.
Right.
Now, do I sound like somebody don't know what the heck I'm talking about? I did it, man. I put one in my car. I instead of going out and buying a new one, I fixed the old one. All I did was take the sucker apart and clean it down and then re-grease it, put it back together, and popped it right back in the car. Spent a couple $100 for a doggone window motor for your car when you don't have to.
Yeah.
But that's what we got to deal with, man. And when people are ready for it, they'll get it.
Eventually. But
in the meantime, I'm going to keep doing what it is that I do. I get like really frustrated because people just, like the government, you know. You always hear me talk about the government. Well, the government says that we got to find clean, renewable, alternative energy sources. And we got to be self-sustained. And we got to be reducing our carbon footprint. And, you know, you heard it all. Save the environment, save the planet. And then when you turn around and you give them the solution, they tell you every reason why under the sun, why it's not possible. Isn't that aggravating?
It is. Very.
Well, don't ask for what you... Don't ask for it if you don't want it. That's what I'm saying. Doggone environmentalists out there always hollering about something. And you tell them a better way to do things. Even when you talk about... running an internal combustion engine just using what they classify as fossil fuels, which is hockahooey as far as I'm concerned. There ain't no fossil fuels. Alright? But I won't sit there and argue that right at the moment. But nonetheless, if you change the way that you use the fuel and you put the fuel in there in a more efficient manner, in which to get the perfect burn on that, you won't have no carbon emissions because you're getting a perfect burn.
Right.
And even if you do have a slight amount of carbon emissions, you're still getting a much, much, much cleaner burn than you was the way you were running it before.
Right.
You know, the people that talk about a... doggone carburetor that would get a couple hundred miles to the gallon. And other people say, well, no, that's just a conspiracy theory, you know. It's aggravating. Let's take a small music break and get refreshed if you want and come back.
Never mind that, never mind that now, never mind that, never mind.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot of...
Thank God I still got my hair! What on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Go course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No, this sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacity stores... This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts? Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
But all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
She's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean, that says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Hello, everybody, we're back. So, basically, you know, science says energy can neither be created nor destroyed. And proof of that concept is if you burn firewood, you end up with more than you started with. Well, not necessarily more, but you end up with wood ash. There's several different things that you can do with wood ash, one of which is making soap out of and traction control to get you out of a slick spot with your tires or whatever. There's a bunch of different things. Plus, you can utilize it on your gardens and stuff like that for nitrogen and fertilizer, whatever. And that, and the fact that one of the things when you're burning firewood, there's a creosote that builds up inside the chimney. And every so often, you got to run these cleaners through there in order to get all that soot and creosote out of there. Otherwise, you run the risk of a chimney fire. So you literally, by burning firewood, just produced more fuel. And there ain't no waste involved in the whole entire process, as I just explained to you. You burned firewood, you produced a second type of fuel and a second type of material that both of these have a purpose that you can utilize.
Right.
That's just one little example. You know, the only thing, like we were talking just a second ago, the only thing that stopped me from building my doggone plasma reactor was that there's specific things that need to be done. This thing needs to be able to hold argon gas inside there and be vacuumed down to the right measurement. Once this is done, then I can show everybody how to take that high voltage, change it into plasma, and then take the heat off of that plasma and turn around and transfer that heat energy into water and literally create a plasma water heater. That's just one of the possibilities of what could be done with this thing. We haven't even talked about the radiant energy portion of it and the visible light spectrum that you would be getting off of it. And so the only thing holding me back is the skills and the tools to do it the right way instead of building it out of junk. If you look at all my videos, everything that I put out there on my videos showing concepts or proof of concepts or trying to explain an anomaly to people, all of that was made out of recycled junk. Very little of it I ever bought. You know, if I needed some extra copper tubing, I might spend a little bit of money and go out and buy something. But other than that, most of it was recycled. I take electrical wire off of old motors, electric motors, and use those to build Tesla coils out of. Because I wasn't worried about, since I was just using it for a Tesla coil, I wasn't worried about a short in the coil. See, on a Tesla coil, you're not, they don't have to be insulated from each other. The number of turns don't have to be insulated from each other very well. Because what's going on there is surface area that is building up energy. It's not like a regular induction motor or electric motor that where you're building up a magnetic field and these you need a stronger magnetic field, so all these wires have to be insulated real well to be able to, for every loop, be able to make a another strong field to add to the one beside it. With the Tesla coil, is literally the surface area that makes the difference of that field that's going up and down through there. And so, you know, with that said, if you got a well insulated coil, you can actually control the frequency range by the number of turns when you build that coil like that. But if you just want to build wireless energy, I've showed in videos where you could take any piece of junk, one little piece of metal, and you can pulse a high voltage into that and produce a magnetic field that you can literally pick up with radios. Old AM radio will pick up the charge off of that thing. All you're doing is expanding and collapsing the field. That's it. That's what frequency is. You produce a magnetic field, it expands, it collapses. That produces a frequency. And you can pick that frequency up wirelessly. Any frequency out there can be picked up wirelessly. All you need is the right antenna to do it. The right antenna would be the equivalence of the resonance that everybody talks about. Find the resonance in there.
Frequency.
Huh?
Even the Earth's frequency.
Yep. So, if you understand that, and you understand how to make an antenna that will pick it up, that's why you're able to, if you take build two Tesla coils identical to each other, same amount of turns and everything, you got a transmitter and you got a receiver, because they're tuned perfectly in with each other. That's why you're always seeing them trying to do with the doggone primary coil, being able to adjust it so that they can get that frequency range right where they want it to match the resonance of the other coil, because the other coil isn't exact as the one that they just they're trying to send the power from. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But if you had a way to precision design two identical coils that, when you pulse these things, the one would send the information, the wave across, and the other one was tuned in for that specific frequency, you'd get your wireless energy transfer that you wanted. The way that people are doing the Tesla coils out there on YouTube, they're basically, you know, hitting in the dark. They'll move the wire here or up and down, the primary up and down, to try to adjust it like the same thing that you would be doing with a potentiometer or a variac or whatever. You see what I mean?
Yeah, but most of those videos are all just, you know, toys.
Yeah. But if they had a full understanding of what it is that it's all about, you know, radio technology out there has been around for quite some time. We're able to, there are radio stations that you cannot hear if you're not tuned into the right frequency. So while you're listening to one radio station, there are multitudes of other radio stations going simultaneously. Those waves are still hitting the same exact antenna, but because that potentiometer or variable capacitor isn't adjusted specifically to receive that particular frequency, it ignores it. Now see, the laws of physics, they say you can't defy the laws of physics. Well, you can tell the laws of physics when to be invoked and when not to be invoked, otherwise the radio would not work. You see what I mean? You got a magnetic field that's coming, it's connecting to that antenna, but you're not hearing anything. When I want to hear it, I'll tune to it. The same thing with the lens effect. When I want the lens effect, I will tune to it. When I want to not invoke the lens effect, I will take the energy that I want, transfer it to a completely different form of energy, and then when I'm ready to use that energy the way that I would have used it before, I'll tune back to it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like you said, you're just using the energy but turning into different states to not invoke a certain, you know, phenomena.
Yeah, and it's all the energies out there. It's right now we're being bombarded with probably trillions of different frequency ranges right now. Some of which may be good, some of which may not be good. But nonetheless, we're still being bombarded with it. And it's not affecting us because of the frequency range of what we are. And
yeah, right, but if there were not any frequencies, we were not able to see anything.
Yep. But that doesn't mean the energy's not still there. It's still there. It's all around you, everywhere. You build the right antenna, you can pick energy right up out of the air. Ain't no ifs, ands, or buts. But once again, then will come the naysayers who will say, oh, you can't do that, that'd be too expensive. You'd have to have an antenna for every single frequency under the sun, blah, blah. Well, look at the doggone radio tuner, man.
Yeah.
How many radio frequencies can you get on one radio?
Yeah, they're saying that radio is too free. That it's easy to pick up those frequencies and harness them.
Yeah.
You know, not just for radio, but for actual electricity. That's why they're switching over to digital. Mm-hmm. It is
well,
so free.
There are certain materials out there that are super sensitive to magnetic fields. Super sensitive to radio frequencies. Germanium's one of them. And so you got a material named after you. Germanium's one of the materials that is really sensitive to radio frequencies. And even if people think that, well, you know, it's too expensive to buy up this much or too whatever, nonetheless, it's still able to pick up radio waves, and you can take that energy wave and you can pump it down into a capacitor and you can still store it. An LED out in the sunlight, take a red LED, put it on a capacitor, and put the voltmeter on there, put it down in the millivolt range, shine it up there to the sunlight and watch as the voltage climbs. It's basically the equivalence of a little mini solar cell. But the material in there, the way that LED works, only requires electron flow to release photons of light. Well, if you put photons of lights in, guess what you get? Electron flow. That's how photovoltaic cells and all those dang things work, man. Picks up that light.
Oh. It's all linked together.
Yep. Do we got Raymond in here?
Yeah.
So how you doing, man?
Pretty damn good. Just listening to you guys' conversation. Y'all are right on the track. You're right on.
Well, we seem to get a lot of guff from a lot of people that, are saying that they want to save the environment, they want clean, renewable, alternative energies, and governments that say reduce your carbon footprint and all that kind of jazz, and sitting there talking about, you know, it's not the energy that we got that's bad. It's the way that we use it that's bad.
There you go.
If you turn around and you understood magnets, just magnets alone, magnets have a permanent force going on right there. And how many years will a magnet last? It's debatable, depending on who you ask and the circumstances, whether temperature or whether you're dropping the thing all the time, whatever. Knocking everything out of alignment, and eventually the magnet loses its power. But nonetheless, when that magnet's sitting there, even if it's sitting on the shelf for 10, 15 years, it's still sitting on the shelf and it still has that magnetic field around it.
Yep.
That is energy even if it's static energy, stationary or whatever, that field isn't fluctuating, for some reason there's a force there that is constant. And if you can take and custom design magnets to literally put the magnetic flux line where you want it, you can build the equivalence of a gear with a magnet. And utilizing these magnets in the proper manner, there ain't no reason why you couldn't custom design an electric or a magnet generator that would spin by itself just because it's trying to right itself at all times. Now, I say...
Yeah, Raymond made a custom magnet piston, put in an electromagnet.
How'd it work?
Yeah, good. Yeah.
I think she did. But like I said, I've said it 1,000 times before. Say, yeah, the kids are fucking genius. He is something else. To watch him work is like watching an artist, like watching Rembrandt paint a Mona Lisa. The kid is unbelievably phenomenal. Most of what I did was just sit and watch him work. Put my mouth on while I said a few things.
Well, that's why we need more Germains in the world. People willing to think outside the box with the creativity to take an idea from just an idea to an actual working piece of machinery.
Yep.
And even doing it with an artistic, he was showing me his gizmo that he made there, and it even looks good. Folks, the government... And the people of the world out there, they said that they needed something. The folks that step forward to it are catching a rash from all different directions, sometimes from within their own circles because they disagree on whatever. I said I was going to prove 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt that energy is free. I feel like I've been more than proved that. But nonetheless... Until an actual working device is on the table that can be measured, then we're still on the go. But you got to take and understand something. Back when DC current was the deal that Edison put out there on the table, and AC current wasn't known, AC current would have been exactly what I'm talking about right now. A new form of energy that people don't understand. And the mathematics would not apply.
It was not, but like you said, it's something they don't understand. They'd rather stick to something that does work. Maybe if it's not efficient, but it does work. We know how it works, so we're not going to switch over to a new, maybe more efficient energy.
Yep. And so now you got AC and you got DC current because Tesla was able to prove his AC current. And that's the standard current we use. But now we're talking about the next stage in the so-called evolution of electricity. So what the next one will be called, who knows. But nonetheless, it's just another form of energy that is basically all the same energy at different frequency ranges and infinite both forward and back, no matter what. If you can count to a trillion forward, then you can count to a trillion in reverse. It's same thing with frequency ranges. Frequency only means, like, you know, how many times something pulses, how frequent it occurs. And so if you got everything from the megahertz range all the way up to whatever the highest gigahertz or whatever, even higher, all those ranges in between, fractions, are that same form of energy. They're just moving faster or slower than one another. And so if you want to take the energy off of a generator, but you don't want to invoke lens effect, then you take that energy off the generator and you don't invoke lens effect, and you turn that energy into something completely different, which you already know by speeding it up or slowing it down, you can turn it back into whatever it is that you want at whatever frequency range you want. If that weren't the case, we wouldn't be using 60 hertz over here in the States, and they wouldn't be using 50 hertz overseas, because the two energies are so close together, the only difference is the hertz range. That's it. You can speed it up, you know. And the higher it gets, the higher the frequency, the higher the voltage. It's ridiculously simple, folks. It gives me a headache. It's so simple.
Isn't that what makes it difficult for people to understand?
What? That it's too simple?
Yep, just too simple.
Well, I wonder, I think back, I wonder if Edison had this issue when he started talking about electricity. They probably thought he was into witchcraft. And then, moving on up to Tesla, I wonder if Tesla had this much problems.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they did.
Stan Meyer showed people in the 70s how to run a car on water. We're in the year 2017, and even though they still do use hydrogen technology in different vehicles, and they use different methods by which to utilize the hydrogen, people still reject the technology or mock it or still believe that it is a conspiracy theory. It don't make no sense. Because had any one of them paid attention in basic science and understood the makeup of what science says that water is, hydrogen and oxygen, and know that if you can separate the two, you got two separate fuels. And in the internal combustion engine engineering, if they understood the how the water reacts under certain circumstances, that you could literally engineer an engine to specifically run off of any type of fuel. The first diesel engine, what was they going to run that off of, Raymond?
Coal dust.
See?
Alright, what about coal dust? Everybody knows that in mines throughout the world that you have coal dust explosions, kills people, blah, blah, blah. So then what about grain dust?
Yeah. Well,
grain dust explosion blows concrete miles away. I mean, if it burns, if you treat it just properly, it will explode. And explosion is power.
That's right.
So why couldn't you run your diesel engine off of dried grass clippings if you just got it down to a powder form?
You can run it off a coffee creamer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's a sunburn.
That's what... Yeah. But the whole point is, see, if you told somebody, hey, I designed an engine that'll run off a coffee creamer, they'd take you as nuts. But why couldn't you? Because all you need is the same kind of reaction that you get inside of a grain silo, which is any static discharge inside a grain silo will blow you up because of all the fine dust of grains in the air.
Right.
So, if you blow in a little bit of coffee creamer in there that's all been crushed down and atomized or whatever, and then hit it with a spark, bam, you got an explosion. Pushes the piston down, turns the camshaft, and so on.
I'm glad you brought up the coffee creamer.
Well,
I'm glad you brought up the coffee creamer. I don't know if I told you what, I was in Oklahoma City working, and had a young kid. He was my helper, fresh out of high school, and I was putting powdered coffee creamer in my coffee. He said, "Oh man, if you knew about that stuff what I know, you wouldn't put it in your coffee." He said, "Oh no, you wouldn't never put it in your coffee again." I said, "Well, what is it?" He said, "No, I can't tell you because you enjoy it too much." I said, "Son, if it's bad for me, tell me." And he said, "It burned." I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, let me see your lighter." So I gave him my cigarette lighter. He took one of the containers, opened it up, lit the lighter, held the creamer up in the air, shook it to where it came down in the powder, and said, "Whoosh!" A big flame come up. He said, see, it burned, it burned. I said, "You idiot. If it didn't burn, I couldn't digest it." Huh. "You just simply fooled me. I need to put more in my coffee."
Huh.
Come on. My body is an engine. It needs fuel.
Yep.
To operate.
Your body is also a thermoelectric generator.
Grass clipping. I showed you that myself.
Yep.
Grass clipping, put them in the microwave, got all the water out of it. Then I put it in a coffee grinder, ground it down to a fine powder, lit my cigarette lighter, sprinkled it down, it goes whoosh.
Yep.
Duh. You can run an engine on that stuff.
So, we ain't never going to run out of fuel, folks. It's not possible. Nope. Been trying
we're
to say this.
Like you said, we're wasting it.
That's right. Everything around us, we live in the carbon-based world that is got water and oxygen and hydrogen and everything necessary for a fire. And so with that said, between the thermal events on the planet and all the static electric discharges such as lightning, the rivers flowing, the waves coming in and out, the wind blowing, the sun shining, if you can't find free energy, you're just not looking, period.
3,000 lightning bolts per second worldwide. Each lightning bolt would light New York City for a year, 2 years.
Well, so the only way to... the only way to ever get this issue resolved, because, you know, people got to see a working device. And I can get you close to the whole deal, but if you're ever really wanting to build something that is going to be something that's going to make it out there to mainstream and then get it past all the government and regulations and all that kind of stuff, you're going to have the connections. You're going to have the machine shops. You're going to have the talent, the skill, the dream team. And you're going to have to get them together, and you're going to have to just do it. It's that simple. I'm building a plasma reactor that I'm billing as I'm calling it a plasma water heater. And in the process of using the energy, changing the energy to a different form, I'm going to demonstrate visible light, which says, science says, light is heat and heat is light. I'm going to take that heat that is generated as well, so I'm getting visible light, heat, and I'm going to take that energy, that heat energy, transfer it through copper tubing into water, which in turn will excite the molecules because of two things going on in there. One would be the high frequency of the voltage itself. The other would be the heat transfer from the plasma. And then take that heat and use it to create a thermal siphon that will exclude a water pump. We won't need a pumping system because it will actually be using heat. Heat rises and cool falls. That's what science says. And from that point on, I can take that heat and turn it back into usable current again, such as DC from anything from Peltier elements to thermal piles, thermal couples. But either way, what would be demonstrated from that is that not one time during this entire process did I ever invoke Lenz's law. The Lenz effect. Never occurred. And I took that energy and I transferred it from one form of energy to another form of energy through another form of energy and on into where I actually turned it back into usable energy again. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. That's what the science book said. That's what will be demonstrated by this device. And the efficiency.
If energy cannot be created and it cannot be destroyed, what happened to the energy you used yesterday?
Still there.
Then the third law explains that. So the third law of the conservation of energy says everything you need to know if you just pay attention to it.
Well, say it out.
Third law of conservation of energy says,
say it out.
You can change its size, shape, form, and or direction.
That's right. And that's all I'm talking about. I never talked about trying to get over unity. Never talked about trying to get 0 point. I always said I was going to prove free energy. And right. So with that said, even if I'm not able to get out more than I put in, then I still made that generator so much more efficient than what it was before because I'm using that energy that is being generated by that generator in a completely different fashion and not invoking the lens effect, which in turn causes that generator to have to work harder, which if the more lights or the more load you put on it, eventually it will get to a point where the driving force can no longer keep up and it will drop on its face. And so if I know that I can take high voltage, high frequency energy, and I know that there are technologies that's been around in existence forever that make it so simple to literally gather up static discharges in the hundreds and thousands of volts, I can take these hundreds and thousands of volts because of the pressure and the frequency at which they're going and be able to build a yet even more efficient generator that will, at the very least, improve the efficiency to such an extent that, look, in the old method, in DC current, your current watts and amps mattered. In the second version, in the AC current, your current watts and amps measurements mattered. In the next form of energy, you cannot measure the current watts and amps in plasma. You have to change to a completely different measurement. And from every different type of energy out there, you have to find a different way to measure them because your current math does not apply. That's why I say I don't care about current watts and amps. When I get back to the other side, after I've already changed the energy to utilize it in a more efficient manner and be able to move it from point A to point B so rapidly that I can use it on demand now, and I change it back into something that will run the inefficient junk that we have today, then your math will come back into play. See what I'm saying there, Raymond?
Yes, I do. I see exactly what you say it should.
It's what I've been trying to say for a long time. But doggone it, you get somebody's nose stuck in a school book and they will not come off that school book.
You know, you said something a minute ago, got me to thinking, and I can't remember exactly how you put it. Just something about you pick DC and start pulsing it at a frequency. Actually, isn't that how a capacitor works? If you take DC and you don't pulsate it, then a capacitor will not work. But if you pulsate it at a frequency, then it will actually build in
Fulton,
correct?
Yeah, it's building up a charge. It's building up pressure inside that deal. And see what's happening here. Is there like just a direct charge on it? Can only put whatever pressure is in the driving force, the charging force. It can only put that amount of pressure. If you only have 12 volts worth of pressure, that's all you can put in there is 12 volts worth of pressure. You can't get more pressure out than you're putting in. But if you take and use the Venturi effect and you take that 12 volts and you pulse it and then it discharges across there, it literally drags energy in with it because of the forward moving pressure is actually creating a vacuum behind it and pulling pressure with it, then that pressure is higher than the initial pressure you started with just for the simple fact that you're pulsing that charge before it gets inside there. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And the more you pulse it, the more rapidly, the higher the frequency, the higher the voltage, the higher the pressure becomes, and you can get that capacitor to charge much higher than the initial input voltage. Now keep in mind, you got all this pressure, you got all this voltage, you don't have the current watts and amperage at this stage of the game. The measurements aren't going to apply. You understand what I'm saying?
That I do understand.
So you can't measure high frequency, high voltage with your standard voltmeter. It's not designed to measure that. Your standard voltmeter is designed to measure the current flow, the amperage, the voltage and stuff at a certain range. That's why a voltmeter has a maximum on there, 1,000 volts or whatever. Alright? But once you get up to a high frequency voltage, you try to use that same voltmeter, you're not going to get a measurement. And anything, you're going to burn the doggone thing up because of the way that it's designed.
Almost pure guesswork, right?
Yeah, but your math just stopped at that point. When you can no longer measure it with your existing measurement equipment, your math no longer applies. Because you're up in the megahertz or the gigahertz range. And so now you need a completely different method to measure it, such as, an indirect method using an oscilloscope or something.
Right.
And then you can measure how high the voltage is and at what frequency range it is. But when you're up to this super high frequencies, current watts and amps don't apply because it's in a completely different form. I wish that people would slow down long enough to listen to what it is that I'm trying to say to them, because if they ever figure it out, then they'll understand that energy is without a doubt free. You got all these different ranges of frequencies that you can use. If you take and want to move a lot of energy rapidly, you speed it up, which increases the pressure. When that pressure gets to the other side, the more pressure you got on the other side, the more current flow you can come up with.
Yep.
If I take a really thin hose and I'm squirting water in this hose into a really large pipe, if I can raise that pressure up high enough, I can force enough pressure inside that pipe to cause the pressure downside that pipe to where that pipe will flow its full capacity of water out the other side. Because I'm putting it in there so rapidly that it doesn't have time, just with the spray by itself, I'm not going to be able to fill that pipe up. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. That is a good scenario. I like that.
But if I can put that in, if I can put that water in there so rapidly, it doesn't have time to, it fills that pipe up. I mean, I'm putting it in faster than the pipe can handle it. Now I've got current flow again.
Right.
If it works with water, it'll work with doggone electricity, because all of it basically works the same way, and everything travels in waves and energy. And when it's finally stationary and nature's all balanced out, it ain't moving. It's just sitting there. But the electrons inside there, the way that the electron theory of the atom was explained in science, is that what you see, what you would see if you could get down there small enough would be like a little micro mini universe, so nothing is actually solid. There's empty space in between it, just like out in the outer space, the same way they explain that. The dark matter that we don't understand. Go out there and ask the scientists what would happen if you took a sewing needle and you stretched it out all the way from Texas all the way to New York. What you'd end up with. If you could make yourself small and make that thing stretch all the way out there, size wise, and you could look up and all you'd see is all these atoms floating around.
Yeah.
We can't see down that far yet. And the moment we are able to see down that far, to see exactly what's going on, do you realize that nobody has ever seen an electron? Nobody's ever got a picture of an electron. It's theoretical. We've seen the atom. And IBM even wrote their name in with atoms. In, under electron microscope. They were able to place atoms to literally draw out a little stick figure and animate that stick figure. Look it up. It's out there on YouTube. It's called Atom. And it's done by IBM. So anyway, if you can custom design magnets, which they now have the technology to do it, you could literally 3D print parts. If you had the capability of capturing radioactive material, which in turn energizes something like glow powder or phosphorescence into visible light that a solar panel could actually register as the right light spectrum to produce an electric charge, and you were able to do what Laser Saber did with his easy spin motor that he 3D printed, you could literally custom design the perfect, provable, dirty word, perpetual motion device. Because if the radioactive decay on tritium is how many ever years, then that's how many years that thing's going to run. The radioactive decay on the nuclear fuel rods, where they only use a small percentage of the fuel rod's power, and then it's classified as depleted enough to where it will no longer boil water efficiently to turn turbines, but then has to sit in a cooling pond for 10 years to cool down yet even more before they can actually store it in a container and then bury it underground. Otherwise, it would pressurize itself from the heat and create an explosion, slinging that stuff to all four points of the compass. How many years does it take for a battery to be able to work before it's classified as free energy? There is enough radioactive waste on this planet to generate power for this planet for God knows how many hundreds, if not thousands, of years. There's thermal vents all over this planet. There are waterfalls and rivers and oceans and waves and wind. Lightning, static, heat, and solar power. If you cannot find free energy, you can go back to sleep, because you ain't paying attention anyway. When the world is prepared to do exactly what they've been saying, then we'll get together with the Dream Team and we'll make it so. Clean, renewable, alternative energy that you've been claiming you wanted for, in my lifetime, at least 30 or more years. I'm 52 years old and I can remember way back during the whole Arab oil embargo. I can remember when gasoline was so cheap, and then now looking at the modern day fuel prices, people would have had a stroke back in them days, because they had a stroke when it went up to 50 cents a gallon. And now, the people are saying you got to reduce your carbon footprint, we got to save the planet from so-called global warming, which is one of the big hockahooies of all the hockahooies in the history of hockahooies. And you wonder why I call it mad science? You can burn the soot out of the stacks for fuel that you burn firewood in. You can burn coffee creamer. You can burn grain dust. You can burn water. You can burn anything on this planet can be burnt if it's atomized, vaporized, and sent into a combustion chamber in a proper manner. So if you ever run out of fuel, there ain't no planet left. Period. There ain't no environment left. There ain't no science left. There ain't nothing. Because this is a carbon-based world that is full of water, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, you name it, it's there. Everything that science said. And used in a proper manner, all the energy that is coming from this earth and from off of this earth is more than enough energy to run every single light bulb, every single refrigerator, every single appliance you got, and even your game stations as well as your TV and more. Forever. For free. So the joke's on you. Keep paying your light bill. That's all I can say.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.